This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably. Like, usually the audience boos, okay, that's fine. You just boo them back.
Yeah.
But when it's the establishment booing you by turning the lights off,
yeah.
And to this day, I still believe I was not bombing.
Yeah.
They just weren't laughing. Hot breath. Yo, yo, hot breath-averse. We're back. It is I, your host, comedian Joel Byers. And you know what time it is. Hot breath. That is right, hot brethren and sistren. Welcome back to Hot Breath, your weekly guide to comedy mastery. This is Hot Breath episode number 164. Yes, we made it. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode with Beth Stelling, one of my absolute favorite comedians. Her interview is so awesome. Especially, but I did four shows last night and was out till like 1:30 in the morning, and then woke up to have a merry day out at the Home Depot and the Target and the grocery store. So I'm taking a break from the weekly meal prep to record this to get out to you by every Monday we release these. So I want to get this out to you. So especially, thanks for your patience and support. So I did hope you enjoyed that episode. You know, I did my game show. I do a monthly game show here in Atlanta. It went amazing. We almost sold out, like three tickets short of selling out. So thank you to everyone that came out. I did a poll of the audience. There were so many people in there that were there because they're Hot Breath fans. So those of you that aren't in Atlanta and couldn't make the trip, I will be posting the game show as an episode this week as well, later on in the week. So if you haven't heard my game show yet, there is an episode a few episodes ago, between 161 and 160 is a good place to find that in the feed. But my apologies if I'm rambling. I just want to thank you for all the support and let you know that this episode, we're throwing it back. And I've been listening to a lot of your feedback. We've been connecting a lot, especially on our Facebook group and the Hot Breath Comedy Network. And I've been asking people, what do you want to hear more of? Especially in 2018, I am not understating that my mission with this podcast is to create an entire comedy network where comedians can learn from each other while also connecting with each other and while also connecting with fans. So in the inspiration of that and in connecting with you personally and getting your feedback, a lot of you have said that you really enjoy the interviews and the long-form discussions of other people's insights and experiences and their whole process. But a lot of you said you wanted to hear more of my process and my experience and my insight. So with that in mind, I thought I would post this episode I did. I did an interview with NPR StoryCorps, another Atlanta comedian, an improviser, if those are mutually exclusive words. Chris Gray actually interviewed me on NPR StoryCorps. And this was a couple years ago, and this is pretty much the origin story. This is pretty much my origin story and the origin story of my entire mission and how I got to where I am today. As I'm rapidly approaching, on February 1st will be my 9-year anniversary of doing comedy. February 1st, 2010, I started doing stand-up at Side Splitters Comedy Club in Knoxville, Tennessee, RIP, and it's grown into this. So this will give you a nice context for me as the host and really how I came to be a comedian and my whole backstory, and just really gives you a little more insight into why I'm doing what I'm doing. And then hopefully that will help us to work even more together on how we can help build this network together based on all of our kind of origin stories. So this is a special one. I'm excited to share it with you. I'm excited to give you a little different flavor. You know, sometimes you get a little salt, sometimes you get a little pepper, sometimes you get a little cinnamon, sometimes a little nutmeg. So hopefully this will help cleanse your hot breath palate with a new perspective as going forward this year. I do want to start providing more educational content based on, of course, other people's, but also my personal experience and my own process as well. So this is a step in that direction. So enjoy. If you have any questions, of course, you can always connect with me on social media at Hot Breath Pod or at Joel Byers Comedy or my website, joelbyerscomedy.com. I mean, you know, I'm accessible. joelbyerscomedy@gmail.com is a way you can email me directly. But otherwise, just enjoy this episode. And if you have any questions or any other requests, I'm listening. So just feel free to connect and we will make it happen. So let's make this episode happen, huh? Huh? All right. That being said, there is only one thing left to do. And that is inhale a hot breath with me, Joel Byers.
Hi, I'm Chris Gray. I'm 43, and it is October 3rd, 2015, and we're at the Atlanta StoryCorps booth with my friend Joel Byers.
I am Joel Byers. I am 27 years old. It is October 3rd, 2015. I'm at the Atlanta History Center StoryCorps, and I'm with my friend and fellow performee, Chris Gray.
All right. Okay, we spoke before already when we were talking about podcasts. You were doing my radio show. And one of the things I really was interested in was your beginning as a comedian. Mm-hmm. And you started in college. You say your last few years in college or your last year?
Last semester.
The last semester.
Yeah.
But I want to find out about the decision to move to Atlanta. Like, once you started, how did you pick Atlanta as your place to come next, as opposed to, you know, if you already knew you wanted to be a comedian, mm-hmm. going to New York, going to L.A., Chicago, another city?
Yeah, I picked Atlanta mainly because I'm from here.
Okay.
So I was coming back home, you know, to cover the whole loan situation. and so I had a place to live, a.k.a. mom's place. But I picked Atlanta just basically because I wanted to move back home and kind of regroup after college. Because you graduate college and you're like, okay, cool. Well, I guess that vacation's over.
Yeah.
4-year vacation away from home before you move back in. So I pretty much, to reiterate myself for a third time, Mr. Gray, I picked Atlanta because that's where I was from. And I wasn't really quite aware of how good the scene was moving back down here. I just came back down here and got on Facebook, and there's an Atlanta comedy group on there that lists all the shows we have going on, which have, I mean, grown exponentially since I started.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 5.5 years ago. And I couldn't be happier to start my career here.
So when you came, it was 2010,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay. So you were coming to Atlanta kind of, you know, you were from here. You were going to, I guess, was there a plan of, all right, I'm going to go home to Atlanta, hit some open mics, practice, get better. But you said you didn't know anything about the scene here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was all just get on stage,
yeah.
wherever, however, with whoever in the audience.
So when did you first discover, you know, like, wow, Atlanta really has a lot going on stand-up-wise? Was it once you got out and started doing shows and seeing some of the other comedians, or was there a moment where it clicked and you were just like, wow, this is a lot happening here?
I could tell by the volume of shows that mm-hmm. there was something positive happening here. And then I've performed in like a Chicago and, I mean, L.A. and New York. I've performed in all the others throughout my career so far. And every time I come back from performing one of those cities, I'm like, man, Atlanta really has something unique and special going on. Because
mm-hmm.
it's not only the volume of stage time, but it's the quality of stage time.
Yeah.
You know, there's comedians here, but there's also comedy fans. people to come out and support the shows that are on, you know, Wednesday nights at Java Monkey in Decatur, you know, which I host, 8:30 p.m. But that's really when it clicked for me, when I performed outside of the city and was like, oh, wow, this isn't happening anywhere else.
Yeah. And I think we touched on that last time we talked about when you go out on the road, some of the other cities, and you see the level of their of the performers there. You know, like, not so much New York, Chicago, the big cities, mm-hmm. but some of the smaller ones, D.C., Nashville, you know, Albuquerque, you know, any of these these spots, and yeah. there's comedians. But I felt when I went to some of those cities and you see their best performers, and I was always like, wow, we've got way better performers, you know, which yeah. actually, and then a few times when I've been up to New York and I've seen some performers up there and they've got credits, you know, they're like, oh, this person writes on this show,
right.
they're on this. And then I watch their set and I'm like, I have seen way better comedians back home in Atlanta, you know, and it kind of encourages you, you know,
yeah.
we're like, if these people are getting, you know, writing gigs and TV spots, you know, and I feel I'm just as good, if not better.
Yeah.
And it's not really like an ego. It's just like I just feel my performance is better or on that level. It encourages you. You know, you're like, oh, wow, we're really doing something really good developing here in this city.
Yeah.
That we can really stay on par with these, you know, talent in other towns.
And a lot of people from other towns are moving to Atlanta. Like, there's a lot of people from D.C. and Nashville, like you said, and people coming from Huntsville and whatnot.
Yeah.
I think we've had a few people move actually from Chicago down to Atlanta as well.
Yeah, and a lot of actors, too, mm-hmm. coming from L.A., moving to Atlanta because this is where the work is. There's a
yeah.
lot of work here, and also cost of living is cheaper,
mm-hmm.
you know, way cheaper than L.A. and New York. But there's just more opportunity, you know, where it's a smaller pond. You know, L.A. and New York, you know, big pond, you're a small fish. Here, you can be a small fish in a smaller pond. You know, just the statistics, opportunities are there.
Yeah, but, I mean, the small pond of Atlanta hosts the second most productions in the country behind
yeah.
L.A. now.
Yeah.
Just past New York, you know. I mean, as far as music goes, you know, we've had multiple Grammy Award-winning artists, and not just, you know, R&B, but also, like, hip-hop side as well. I know trap music, a lot of people around the country
yeah.
heard of now. I mean, Atlanta's on the map in so many different areas of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like Atlanta's comedy scene should be up and respected just as much. You know,
mm-hmm.
people move to Atlanta for music. You know, like, oh, this is where hip hop is. You
yeah.
know? So same thing should be happening with comedy.
One of the things I'm always interested in when I'm talking to another comedian is kind of the comedian origin story. You know what I mean? It's almost, you know, if you think of like all the Marvel superhero movies.
I was just thinking superheroes.
Yeah. You know, Spider-Man, he's bitten by a radioactive spider. Mm-hmm. You know, Batman, you know, he's a rich guy who, you know, got upset that his parents aren't around anymore. You know,
yeah.
you know? But I always like comedian origin stories because there's always that moment when we decided, oh, this is something I want to do. But sometimes when you go back and you realize there's like a kernel of that started, you know, an experience like from childhood or something
mm-hmm.
that kind of started your sense of humor or the way you look at the world. And have you ever, I don't know, thought about like what is your kind of comedian origin story? Like how are you, what was your upbringing like
mm-hmm.
that kind of began the sense of humor?
I think mine would have to be like Meteor Man.
Okay. You're going to tell me about that.
I know, do you know Meteor Man?
I know it's Robert Townsend, but I can't remember. It's been a while since I've seen that movie.
Oh, man, it's a classic. No, that was a bad reference, and I just thought, I thought you being black, you would get that. I'm sorry.
No, it's been a while since I've seen that movie. I had to go back and watch Idiocracy this week because it's been a while since I've seen that one.
Yeah, yeah. But I would say just to a more respectable answer is, I'd say my comedy source as a kid would come from entertaining people at the dinner table.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to say, I mean, I remember my mom told me, I don't remember this, but my first time I ever got a laugh was like in a church play when I was like super young. And she said, I just took the microphone from somebody and started talking and then everybody just started laughing.
Okay.
But most vivid memory I have of making people laugh as a kid would be at like the dinner table. Because it was awkward. because there's a stepdad, and then there's like, where's the other dad? And like, there's two girls and then a mom, and I'm just the youngest. I'm a kid. So what my goal and my job as a kid, which I now get paid to do, is just make people laugh and forget about how awkward everything is.
Yeah.
So that is what I would do, and really honed, cut my teeth at the dinner table, distracting from maybe how bad the cooking was. And why is the guy in a robe over there? You know, nobody was wearing a robe. That was a terrible way to paint a picture. But yeah, and it was just, you know, just making fun of anything from the food, playing with food, sometimes throwing food, just really just being the center of attention to distract from the awkwardness.
So you're the youngest of, you have two older sisters?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mom, stepdad. Wow. Mm-hmm. Where's dad?
Dad's around.
Okay.
Dad's in Alabama. He's down there in Alabama, down there in Central Alabama. He's down there in the Flatwoods. Him and Nanette bought a probably land down there. Nanette inherited from her parents down there. A couple acres. I think about 10 acres. Both work in a crazy hospital. Good things going on. I think it's a genetic thing. But that's where dad is. And, okay. I mean, he was around, you know, every other Christmas. No. No.
I thought you were going to say, like, every other weekend.
No, we did the Christmas. We did the every other weekend thing and all that, you know, and it's just a weird situation, but not something, you know, divorce rate is around 50% right now. I mean, it's nothing new. If anything, I was just fitting in.
Yeah. Yeah. My parents are also divorced. Mm-hmm. It's weird. It's very telling when I meet someone and they're like, you know, oh, my parents have been together for 30 years. And I'm just like, that's odd.
Yeah.
It's like, whose parents stay together?
Yeah, my girlfriend's parents have been married, I mean, I think over 30 years. And asked them what the secret to marriage was. And he said, hard liquor. Thought it was going to be hard work, hard love, but hard liquor.
Hard liquor, so, not beer and wine. No, you really want to get into the distilled spirits.
Which they're up from Tennessee, so that hard liquor is moonshine, in fact, which I got to connect for if anybody's interested.
All right, that's good stuff. What do your sisters do, your older sisters?
Oh, man, I've got one of my sisters actually lives in Chicago.
Okay.
She's in school up there right now, but she's lived up there for like 10 years. And then my oldest sister, Rebecca, actually lives out in Arizona now, celebrating her 2-year anniversary married to her husband today.
Oh, okay.
Actually, need to remember to call her. I'll text her. It'll be fine. I'll send her an emoji. What my mom always tried to teach us is to just be selfless and always helping. Like, we didn't always have money, but she always made sure to donate to other people, whether it even just be books we had and things like that. So I think I'm doing that with comedy.
Okay. Well, let's talk about, you cracking wise at the dinner table.
Mm-hmm.
Can you remember? And actually, let's talk about that. And we'll go to the moment where you grab the mic. Do you remember what you said or any of the jokes you said at the dinner table that would make your family laugh? Any moment that sticks out?
I really just remember people laughing. And my mom saying, like, how do you come up with these things? You know, and I was like, it's by necessity, really. Yeah. I don't remember anything specific I said, because, I mean, you know, this was every day.
Yeah.
I'm doing open mics at dinner.
Okay.
Every day. Like, I don't remember specific things I said. I mean, I just remember I would make fun of the food or something, and, like, if something didn't turn out quite right or whatever. And, like, if the broccoli was a little lighter green or something, oh, where'd you get this, Mom? A yard sale? You know.
Okay.
So it was really just more things in the immediate area. I wasn't, like, working on bits about, you know, Donald Trump or anything.
You weren't going into your political
stuff.
No,
I wasn't going into that now, you know.
Okay. Well, what made the dinner awkward? Like, what, as a kid, what clued you in that, like, oh, things are kind of weird. I gotta lighten the mood.
You know, you can taste it.
Okay. It wasn't the light green broccoli.
It was not the light green broccoli or the fact that we were eating ramen on Thanksgiving. No, that's a joke. Don't worry about it. It's something you can feel. There's just like a mood, and there was just always this tension, and I was kind of the bridge between the two sides, you know, which, I mean, at the time, I didn't really realize. I was like, oh, I'm just a kid living life, and this is how it is. And then, like, you grow up and reflect, and you're like, oh, that's why they're divorced now. You know, okay. So it's one of those things. I mean, they waited until I guess I went to college to divorce.
This is your mom and your stepdad.
Yes, my mom and stepdad. Yeah.
Okay.
But there's just an awkwardness. I don't know if, I mean, you said your parents are divorced. It's just something you can just feel.
Yeah, there's a tension in the air. It's more, I think it's, as a kid, it's one of those things you pick up on. You start picking up on the things that aren't being said more so than the things that are being said. Which I kind of lend that to kind of like the comedian's observation that you're, you know, something is a little weird here. And now I have to figure out what's weird about it. But yeah, you can kind of tune in to just what that tension is, and it's interesting because a lot of, you know, of our friends who are comedians, there was that, you know, need to, you know, entertain, or that need to relieve tension, whether it was like amongst family or amongst friends. And really, that's what laughter is. It's just like a release of tension, you know what I mean? But it's interesting that, like, a lot of us either felt that, you know, very young as a kid. Like, how old do you think you were at that time?
Oh, man, maybe third or fourth grade.
Okay, yeah.
So I was probably, like, 8 or 9.
Okay.
Yeah, and then, I mean, as I got older, you know, you would combat that awkwardness just by not being home. So, you know, you just don't show up for the gig.
Yeah.
You know, it's a free gig now. Just blow that off. Thanks, though. I've been doing that gig for 6 years. I'm going to go find, you know, a playground.
Okay. So you were 8 or 9. How long had your mom been remarried to your stepdad? Like, how old were you, I guess, when your parents got divorced originally?
Oh, man.
Do you remember that?
I don't even remember that.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't remember how old I was when my dad and mom got divorced. I was super young. And then maybe my mom and stepdad got married when I was in second grade.
Okay.
Maybe, and then they made it till I think my sophomore year of college.
So your mom, stepdad, sisters, rest of your family were here in Atlanta, and your dad was in Alabama.
He was in Rome. I'm originally from Rome, Georgia.
Okay.
He lived in Tryon, Georgia up there. He worked for Rocky Mountain. He laying brick. He lived in Tryon for a while, which is right outside Rome. Oh, it's like the Kennesaw of Rome. It's disgusting. But he lived in Rome for the sake of people listening across the country.
Okay.
He lived in Rome, Georgia, and then moved to Alabama. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, I'm talking about my family. Now I'm like nervous. I'm like, this wasn't really part of the deal. now that you're asking me these questions, I realize my sense of time is terrible. Like, because I don't know when these things happened. I just know they happened.
Right.
And, like, I know we were all in Rome, and then my mom and sisters and I moved to Dallas, Georgia. My dad stayed up there. And then my mom married my stepdad for a while, and then my dad moved to Alabama, maybe senior year of high school.
Okay.
Because he got remarried, and she and his current wife moved, owned some land out there, so they moved out there, and he built a house and all that.
Okay. I like the voice of your dad. You do, like, does he have, like, a thick Alabama accent like that?
He really... I think it's you know, it's just normal. It's just part of the system.
Yeah.
That kind of accent.
But you don't have it. You don't naturally have, like, an accent.
Oh, well, I have redneck Tourette's, of course. But my mom made sure to compress all of that down and speak with confidence and affirmation. But yeah, it's in there.
Okay.
We all got it in there.
Okay. I think anytime we all talk about, like, family members, especially if somebody has, like, a distinct way of speaking, like, and because that's who we're around, is our family. We're very keen on picking that up, and it's just very funny. Like, just because, like, you don't have that accent, but when you go into your dad voice, which is really funny to hear, it's just really interesting. Is your dad funny?
Yeah, he was always funny,
yeah.
And my mom was always funny.
Okay.
So I think that's probably where I got it from, both sides, because they all had to have a good sense of humor, I guess, about the whole situation, just to distract from the awkwardness, I guess. So, I mean, it could even be, my mom was probably the most optimistic person I have ever met, and just be able to flip everything to a bright side. I mean, almost to a fault, I would say.
Yeah.
I was like, no, Mom, people are dying. She's like, yeah, but that frees it up for everyone else. Yeah. I'm like, all right.
She can see the good side of everything.
Yeah. She wouldn't say that, but yeah. So her optimism is something I try to incorporate in my comedy as well. So I talk about a lot of negative aspects of the world, but you flip it. Like you're saying, you know, comedy is all about releasing tension. So there's a lot of tension in this negativity. You can flip it with jokes, and it gives people kind of an area to breathe in that comfortably.
Right. So it sounds like you've always kind of been the peacemaker, reconciler, you know, trying to make everybody happy. Has there ever been, you know, and I know there's got to be a moment, because for all performers in the arts, like when you're extremely, like, disappointed, things aren't going well, you know what I mean? Like, how do you make yourself laugh to release that tension, or do you rely back on your family? Like, when you're having hard times, like, is that like a family dynamic that, like, if things aren't going well for Joel, does mom come or dad come in with a joke to kind of, you know what I mean? To kind of like make you feel better?
Yeah. There is that influence as well. Like, if something is bad happening, you know, you always have, you know, your parents as an outlet to get wisdom, because there's something, you know, older people have. Sometimes you roll your eyes at what they say, but it's based on, you know, experience, which I'm learning as, you know, I'm living, that you can't replace that.
Right.
So I may be upset about, oh, I bombed in an open mic on a Tuesday. And they're like, yeah, but there's people getting bombed physically right now.
Yeah.
You bombed with jokes. You know, people are getting physically bombed right now. So
yeah.
Just keep in perspective. But that's the family side. When you're failing on stage, you know, it's more survival mode. There's no one that you can't call someone on the front row and be like, hey, could you help me out here? You know, no, they're not going to answer. They're texting.
Yeah.
Checking on their 12 Twitter followers. But I mean, early on in my career, I would use anger to combat their apathy.
Yeah.
I remember at Uptown Comedy Corner here in Atlanta, there was one night they turned the lights off on me.
Oh, no.
Not even a boo. Like, usually the audience boos, okay, that's fine. You just boo them back.
Yeah.
But when it's the establishment booing you by turning the lights off, I mean, I don't want to, you know, I may have came off a little racist by saying, oh, okay, a black establishment not playing their light bill. And then from there,
it's just downhill.
It's all downhill. And to this day, I still believe I was not bombing.
Yeah.
They just weren't laughing.
Okay.
They were politely listening.
I love that we all have to have a little bit of I always think of it as like delusional thinking to continue doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, like, no, they're not. I'm not bombing. They're just not laughing. It's like that rationalization.
Oh, yeah. I still believe it to this day. No, I wasn't bombing.
Okay. I love that. Or they get, or we get angry at the crowd, like, oh, no, the crowd sucks tonight.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, the crowd. No, I think it was me.
No, it's not my terrible comedy writing. It's this audience that came out to laugh specifically.
Yeah.
And I just didn't do it. It's their fault.
So is that pretty much how you push through the bombing that we all go through?
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of turn it into something else? Like, you know, is it like just a level of denial when you're bombing?
Oh, man. I would rub the wall.
Yeah, I remember you used to
do
that.
If it wasn't going well, I would just turn around and start rubbing the wall and like spanking the wall and be like, oh, you work out and all this. I would just try to weird people out.
Yeah.
And I still try to do that. Maybe with a little more inspiration.
Yeah.
You know?
I do enjoy when I see you on stage, if the joke isn't working, then you go from speaking to the audience to almost like you're talking to like an imaginary friend that we can't see. And it's so, and for some reason, like, I almost want you to do an entire set of just that, just like almost like we're peeking at this guy who's slowly going mad. He's talking to someone who's not there.
Because oh, yeah.
It's just really, like you said, when you start smacking the wall,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, ooh, someone's working out. It's like, who's he talking to? For some reason, I find that to be really funny.
Oh, yes. I'll sometimes, at my show, I do at a Java Monkey Indicator on a Wednesdays at 8:30. A lot of times what I'll do there is I work out a lot of stuff and mm-hmm. just do weird characters and things. And if it's not getting a laugh, but I can tell they're interested, I'll just be like, yeah, you know, this show is kind of like going to the zoo and I'm like the panda bear. You guys are just watching, you know, play around with the ball they put out there, you know, not really doing much of anything, but just being like, wow, he's not funny, but interesting, you know, which I always heard, you know, I can't remember which comedian said it, but if you can't be funny, you know, be interesting.
Be interesting, yep.
Yeah. And then the funny will develop out of that eventually.
Yeah. Well, like the thing I think you're doing with the podcast and trying to bring more eyes and ears really to Atlanta comedy, it's like something that sounds like you've always done as a kid. Like you've mm-hmm. always kind of been the person who's trying to make everybody happy. And I kind of see it, you know, with what you're doing right now with trying to bring more attention to the Atlanta comedy scene. What do you ultimately want to do in the end, like when you, I guess, think about, you know, man, I've made it when, like, is it just purely stand up or is it something else? Is it TV? Is it movies? Is it radio? You know, what is your definition of success in this business?
Really doing this is a success for me. I gotta be honest. Just being on here is a great success. but I mean, overall, I want to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to not only be in movies and, you know, I mean, write a book,
mm-hmm.
maybe, you know, do radio, but do it all on my terms.
Right.
You know, that's the whole point of, like, trying to bring the focus to Atlanta comedy is that you don't have to, you know, move to be like, oh, I got to go out to L.A. so I can write a sitcom. You can write it in Atlanta.
Right.
You know, there's plenty of inspiration here. Mm-hmm. Clearly, that's why people are, you know, one of the reasons people are filming here. And LeVar Walker, one of the guests on my podcast, Hot Breath Podcast, he's been on tour with Kevin Hart. He's been on the Shaq All-Star Tour. He's in the middle of, he wrote a pilot for a sitcom about himself here.
Mm-hmm.
And they flew him out to L.A. to, like, run the rounds, pitching it and everything. But he talks about, you know, having to fly out to L.A. for productions that are filming in Atlanta.
Right.
And he's been able to get all this success without ever leaving Atlanta. And interviewing him, and he's not the only one been able to get that success from Atlanta. Clayton English won Last Comic Standing straight out of Atlanta, you know. And I think that with how technology is and how interconnected everybody is now, the old system of having to move somewhere else to get exposure is broken.
Right.
You know, we need to really look at the tools we have available and just create your own success.
Right. I've always thought of Patton Oswalt always said he loves doing stand-up, and when he gets to do TV and movies, those things just fuel his stand-up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He did the voice of Ratatouille. So then after that, he made enough money where now he can, you know, he can go out and do stand up for the next 6 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of, you know, Ratatouille bought his house. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So like, but his, you know, his goal is to be a stand up and all the other things are kind of like our day jobs. Everybody kind of has a day job, no matter if you're full time in the business, you know, in this business. Your day is spent, you know, you don't get up at noon every day. Your day is still spent doing something, whether it's writing, various projects, you may be acting in something, you may be producing something. So you always kind of have a day job that fuels or supports or pretty much produces your stand-up and lets you go out and do what you want to do. So that sounds like kind of what you want to do. You want to be able to do it all, but stand-up is kind of your ultimate outlet?
Oh, yes. Stand up forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as soon as I did it, I knew this is what I want to do. But the good thing about, you know, creative work is that it all informs each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I make flyers for my show on Photoshop. I can see parallels between how I develop a flyer and how I develop a joke, you know, and a lot of what I started to notice with that is I teach a comedy class, and I noticed talking to people, complete novice of comedy, a lot of them. You know, some people just retired, you know, wanting to try something new they always wanted to do. And just seeing them bring in their experiences from maybe working in a cubicle for 30 years, but just seeing how they can even find parallels between how they would develop a report or something and how they now develop a joke. So it's that's the great part about living a creative life is there's inspiration everywhere.
Yeah.
And it all makes each other segment stronger.
Yeah. You're pretty inspiring to me because you actually work hard at this, which it doesn't seem. Sometimes it seems like a lot of our fellow performers are just kind of like, I just do this. It's more of a social thing for them.
Mm-hmm.
But you actually kind of have a bit of a plan. You're actually, you know, teaching classes. You do podcasts. You're producing things. And that's actually really inspiring to me because, like I said, our age difference, I'm 43, you're 20, 26, 27.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm always like, man, like anytime I'm like, nah, I'm not going to go out and do a show tonight. And then I kind of like look at your Instagram feed and I'm like, man, Joel's out there working, man. So that motivates me to like get up and go hit a mic or something like that. So I got to say, you're a really big inspiration to me. And like you said, you're saying before how, you know, you look up to, you know, you should listen to your elders, but I'm like, you're younger than me, man. So I'm like, wow. I'm like, I want to be more like Joel.
Wow, man. Nobody's successful on accident.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, one of the people I interviewed, Rodman, who won Last Comic last year, and is now developing an NBC sitcom based on his life, is, you know, he's been doing comedy 20 years, and he didn't get recognition until he won Last Comic Standing last year.
Right.
But he's been working this whole time, doing various, you know, he had a Comedy Central half hour. Most people still haven't heard of him over his career. And he talked about on my podcast that anybody who's had a successful career in comedy has had it by being consistently funny.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way around, he looks cool, he'll be funny. You know, I mean, you got to be funny at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah.
And it requires work.
Absolutely. A lot of work. But I think it's like our job, we make it look easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you get up on stage and you make it look like, oh, I'm just coming up with this off the top of my head.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you don't realize I wrote this 2 years ago and I've been practicing it.
Yeah.
And then when I get on stage, I pretend like, oh, here's something I just thought of, you know? And then I think people see that and they go, well, if he's just up there, just stuff coming off the top of his head, I can do that. It's like, no, you don't know the tens of 50 composition books filled with failed jokes.
Yes.
Hours of
rubbing the wall in front of 12 people in a coffee shop.
Oh, yeah. All the bad gigs that you've been to. All the times you bombed.
Yes.
Had the lights turned off on you.
it's all part of it. I mean, any comedian you talk to is going to have these stories.
Yeah.
That's why comedians are the most interesting people on the planet. Is because we do... We're like, I want to go to that bar and talk to 15 people while they're watching, you know, Monday Night Football.
Exactly. And they didn't come here to talk to me.
No. But you're like, you know what? I can get them, though.
Yeah.
You know, I can get them.
There's that delusion again.
I drove down to Tallahassee to perform at an oyster bar known for its hamburgers. Okay.
That's hilarious.
Netting negative $50, might I add. But it was a great experience.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just comedians all have these stories.
Yeah. All right. So we've talked about, you know, all the bombing.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a night like where it all clicked, like the show that always stands out in your mind? And it's one of those things that, like, for me, a good show can carry me for months.
Oh, man.
For months.
I just featured at Uptown Comedy Corner, the place that turned the lights off on me a few years ago. I just featured there probably 3 weeks ago now, and I'm still riding the wave from that high of performing like 7 sold-out shows over a weekend in front of, you know, like 350 people.
Yeah.
The very first show that sticks out to me, where I was like, oh, man, I've got this figured out, idiot. I did a show at the Funny Farm in Alpharetta. It used to be inside a go-kart track for anybody.
Yeah.
But it was an open mic, and I had a bunch of I had a mustache at the time, and I had a bunch of jokes about a mustache, and it was just all whack. And but it killed. Like, every line got a laugh. And I remember getting off stage, my friends were there, and I was like, yeah, I feel like Superman. And that was the first time I'd ever been on stage and been like, oh, I've got this figured out.
Yeah.
You know, and then the next show you go out and bomb doing the exact same jokes. But that was you. What I've noticed with doing stand-up is you have most of it's just terrible and depressing, but you have these shows that keep you optimistic and keep carrying you forward. Like, you go through a slump and then have a killer show. Like, I did a show, the biggest show I've ever done was at a church in front of like 1,800 people. And I mean, that many people laughing at once at every breath you're taking. I mean, that's I get goosebumps thinking about that now, and that was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's those things will carry you through the dark nights. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So tell me about, you finished up the first season of your podcast.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to do with the second season?
The second season, I want to keep highlighting Atlanta talent. Mm-hmm. The first season focused on Atlanta comics on the 2015 season of Last Comic Standing.
Mm-hmm.
So I got all them compartmentalized. So now I want to start highlighting Atlanta talent that maybe started here, and then some people are up in New York now. Some people are in L.A., mm-hmm. South Africa. You know what I mean? There's Atlanta comedy all around the globe right now. So the whole point is just to keep highlighting Atlanta comedy. But I want to interview everybody from Atlanta comedy. I'm talking, you know, open micers up to, you know, like Jeff Foxworthy.
Right.
So, I mean, people don't understand, like, the history of Atlanta comedy.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. Chris Tucker.
Chris Tucker?
Yeah, all the blue collar guys. I think Ron White, he's here.
He lives here. I don't know if he's from here, but and what you can hear on the first season is, like, Drew Thomas is another comedian who now has his own club in Vegas. He actually decided to move to Vegas instead of L.A.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And he has his own club now, but he talks about on the podcast seeing Atlanta going from him hosting the only open mic in the city to now, you know, it's three open mics a night, and now he has his own club out there.
Yeah.
And what I think people can gravitate towards with the podcast is you don't have to be a comedian to enjoy it. You know, a lot of times, you know, you say people see the comedian on stage and like, oh, they make it look so easy. But it's really a behind the scenes, because I am an Atlanta comedian. So these people are comfortable giving me a little more insight into how they got to where they are, you know, because it varies everywhere from Rodman, who's been doing it 20 years and now finally getting his break.
Right.
To, you know, like a Rob Hayes or Caleb Sinan, who's been doing comedy a few years and getting their first television debut, you know. Caleb, I interviewed him right before he moved out to L.A., and he talks about the battle of being a preacher's kid and his family believing L.A. is where the devil lives.
Yeah.
And him battling with the decision to actually move out there, you know. And Mia Jackson quit her corporate job to follow her dream of comedy. Like, it's not just about, you know, we do go in the creative process, but it's about the human process of, you know, following your heart.
Yeah.
And seeing it pay off.
Right. And working hard, working towards a goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what would your advice be for up and coming comedians, especially those starting here in Atlanta? Because there seems like every year there's a whole new, it's almost like a new class of comedians starting, you know, starting. What would your advice now, 5 years in, and after you've spoken with so many comedians here, what would your advice be?
Just get on stage. Mm-hmm. That is where you learn everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, when I started teaching a comedy class, I felt kind of like a hack. Like, being, I used to be like, oh, somebody teaching comedy class, good for them. But I do it from the approach of like, okay, I mean, you're gonna have to perform while you take this class. A lot of people, I've had people drop out because they're like, oh, I don't want to perform. But if anything, we perform in class and give each other constructive feedback on the set, even if you don't want to come out and perform on like my show.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've always heard in interviews from comedians is you have to get on stage. That's where comedy is a language, and you only learn it by using that language. And the only way to use that language is being in front of a room of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like practicing, you know, guitar in your room. You've got to be in front of an audience.
Right.
So, I mean, at the bottom line is get on stage.
Yeah.
What about you?
I would always say my advice is don't be afraid to change.
Mm.
Because I think a lot of us, but you start out and usually have, I always feel like a lot of us kind of start out with a certain comedian in our head. And you can always see, like at the open mics, like someone gets up there and they're saying jokes and you're like, he's been watching a lot of Dave Chappelle.
Right.
I can hear mm-hmm. that cadence or timing or in his material or, you know, you watch him like this guy's been watching a lot of Bill Burr and that's who's in their head.
Yeah.
And so I think like sometimes people start out. I mean, I did the same thing. I can't remember who was in my head. It was probably like a melange of people. But then when that and they always say it like finding your own voice, and it's so nebulous and you really don't know what that means at first. But it's really, to me, it's once you stop having all of those other voices in your head, you know, you're not emulating or trying to copy a style. And it's just you, the way you tell jokes, the way you tell a story, the way you present yourself, just like with your friends and family, like mm-hmm. how you are amongst people that you're most comfortable with. That to me is finding your own voice. So like, don't be married to one thing and then be afraid to change. And it's going to change your material too.
Definitely.
You know, there's jokes I wrote, gosh, 7 years ago when I was single, and they were good jokes and they were all, you know, all about dating. But I'm married now, so I can't get up there now and be like, yeah, I was dating my girlfriend. And mm-hmm. people are like, don't you have a ring on your finger? You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, so that material, I was like, well, I guess that's gone. And at first, it used to give me a lot of anxiety because I was like, no, that's a good joke. I don't want to get rid of that. But I'm like, it really no longer applies to me. Mm-hmm. So I can't really get up there and sell that anymore. So I have to like let it go and trust that you've got this well that you can go back to. I'm like, I know how to write jokes. I know I can come up with something that's funny. So I can let that go and come up with something new now. That's a snapshot of where I am today. Because that stuff was a snapshot of where I was 7 years ago. So yeah, don't be afraid to change.
Yeah, that's how I feel doing mustache jokes and all that. You know, like I would never do that now.
I just remembered that you had a mustache. I forgot all about that.
But it's just following. That. Yeah, I mean, and what you're saying does take time for all the new comics out there. I mean, it, you know, it's an evolutionary process. Mm-hmm. You know, it just comes with staying committed to it.
Yeah.
But like you're saying, keep challenging yourself. Take risks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have fun.
Yeah. Dude, thank you so much. This has been awesome.
Oh, thank you, Chris Gray.
Yeah.
All right. Hot Breath-averse. There you go. There I am in a nutshell. Do with all that information what you will. I hope you found it as informative and also educational as I did doing the interview. If you want to connect with me, I know I said in the intro, social media is a great way to connect with me. Also email joelbyerscomedy@gmail.com. I will put that in the show notes. But all in all, I hope this helps us move forward in the content I'm going to be sharing in terms of just my own personal process and my own personal highs and lows and just the grind I'm on. We're all out here on this comedy grind, so the more we can connect about that grind and realize we're not alone. We're all going through highs and lows and crests and troughs and peaks and valleys and thus life, but also comedy in general. So I know you're listening to this because you're either just a loyal comedy fan or a comedian out on the grind. So if you're looking to connect with more people in that realm, you can always sponsor the podcast. You know, that's a great way to just connect directly to an audience. I did a sponsorship with Rick Roberts on the School of Laughs podcast, and a lot of you came over and are now loyal Hot Brethren and Sisters. So podcasting is an amazing way to connect with an audience, whether you have a festival coming up, you want to promote an album that they can download, or I mean, just whatever you have going on. You have a cool book you want to share. I mean, the audience is you. So if you want to connect with more people like you, hit me up and we can talk about a sponsorship opportunity. I'm also doing one-on-one writing sessions. What I've posted some actually, I've recorded them and posted them actually in the Hot Breath podcast feed. So, you know, I do one-on-one hourly sessions to help people punch up old material or organize sets for an upcoming showcase they have or festival they have, or just helping discover new material. So I love comedy. I love helping others in their pursuit of comedy. So any way I can do that, joelbyerscomedy@gmail.com. Don't hesitate to even just reach out with any questions. And let's connect, y'all. This is a network, peeps. So you want to meet other listeners? We do have a Facebook group, Hot Breath Comedy Network. If you search that in Facebook, just request to join. I'll let you in, and then you can get in on all the interactive fun we're doing over there. But this is growing, and I feel a big shift in momentum happening in terms of the engagement and the expectations of this podcast and beyond. So I wanted to take the time with this episode to share my own personal, pretty much where I gained my perspective, where I learned my perspective, the experiences that inform my perspective. So then you can now have a more informed perspective of not only my mission and my backstory, but also my vision and what I'm hoping to create with this. So all that being said, Hot Brethren and Sistren, thank you so much for connecting. I love to hear from you. And one of my favorite things I love to hear is when my guests reach out to me and are like, man, a lot of your listeners reach out to me saying they learned a lot. I really appreciated that. So last week's episode with Beth Stelling, if you enjoyed that episode, please reach out to her and just let her know, because that is how the hot breath spreads, is when someone comes on the show and they're like, man, it was a good interview. And then the listeners really reached out saying how much they enjoyed the interview, that hot breath. So then she'll be more willing to spread the word through her own network and her own channels. When she's out at the big show she does, and she's like, oh, hey, Gary Goldman, I did this podcast called Hot Breath. I know you're doing all these comedy tips. You should hop on there. So Gary Goldman, by the way, if you're not following his Twitter, he is posting comedy tips like daily, and they are amazing. And he is a hashtag guest goal of 2019. So we're going to start a campaign to get Gary on this podcast. But let's do one piece at a time. If you enjoyed Beth's interview, just hit her up on Twitter, hit her up on Instagram. Just be like, that Hot Breath podcast interview was awesome. Any other guests as well, that's a great way to show support and spread the network. So thank you so much for listening all the way through this outro. Thank you so much for listening all the way through this interview and all the others we do. And you know, we're here every Monday. So thank you to my wife, of course, Aaron Byers, for making the theme song. And until next Monday, right here on Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.